CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Adrian Wooldridge, who is Badgett for The Economist magazine. Most importantly, he's the author of a new book, The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. Adrian is departing Economist. He is moving to become an Atlanticist and to work at Bloomberg. And so everything in his book, The Aristocracy of Talent, already describes how Britain, how the British Empire chose and chooses leaders. It also describes how my world on this side of the Atlantic chose and chooses leaders. All of these adjustments are in train. And we begin with Adrian's penultimate column for Badgett, his identifying the establishment in Britain today, the one we observe on the television, the one we hear about when Charles and his wife tour the world. That Britain is divided into twain, strikingly similar to how America can sometimes be understood. Adrian, a very good day to you, and congratulations on your moving to an Atlanticist.
Thank you.
You're in the Churchillian tale here, a man of two worlds. However,
yes,
I begin in your world. You describe the establishment today. You point to a man named Henry Fairley, who identified the establishment as similar to the court and country of the 17th and 18th century. How so, Adrian? Good evening to you.
Well, Henry Fairley, who was a great journalist, started off in England, actually, and then moved eventually to the United States, where he lived for several years in the offices of the New Republic, not wanting to waste money on renting a flat. But he coined the phrase the establishment to refer to the sort of the people who permanently run the country. And he meant by that the crown, the courtiers, the military, the senior civil service, the senior judiciary. And that was in those days, in the 1950s when he was writing, was a very conservative establishment. And what I argue in my column is now that we don't really have one establishment, we have two establishments. We have the Conservative Party and the forces connected with the Conservative Party, who are nominally the government of the country, well, who are the government of the country, have lots of ancillary institutions, think tanks, and lots of deep connections, I think, with the monarchy, with the senior civil, with senior armed services and things like that. But also we have another establishment which has grown up since the 1960s, and that's the progressive liberal sort of leftish establishment. These are the people who run the universities, who run the civil service, the senior civil service, and who run the sort of the cultural institutions. And you will find, if you go and talk to senior civil servants, particularly people in the cultural institutions or people who run universities, you will find it very hard, if not impossible, to find somebody who voted for this government, who thinks Boris Johnson is anything other than the complete buffoon. So one is a conservative establishment, the other a very left-wing establishment, and they are both establishments. They're both very deeply rooted, but they both think the other people are the ones who really run the country. So the Conservatives say, well, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that, we'd like to do the other, but we can't. We're only the government. But this permanent establishment frustrates us. And on the other hand, the liberal establishment will blame everything that goes wrong in the country on the government.
This can get confusing because it appears at first glance that this is urban and rural. Something that we have a division. We have a version called flyover country, very resentful of how it's ignored or castigated. Do you have a similar effect?
Absolutely. You pointed out that I said in my piece that it's a bit like the 18th century when the biggest division was between the court and the country, the court being the people surrounding the monarch and the country being the sort of backwards Tory gentleman who lived in country houses. And we have that now in a more democratic way, in that the liberal establishment is very, very urban, very metropolitan, very much based on the cities and the university towns, whereas the government, the conservative establishment, is rooted in the provinces and the countryside, and particularly now in the northern countryside.
The distinctions now become quite fun. This is all the makings of fabulous novels, of course.
But there's
one that doesn't seem to fit, and maybe that's why it's been rejected or bypassed. What was New Labour, if it's somewhere in this matrix?
Well, New Labour was essentially The progressive liberal establishment, so the BBC, the media in general, minus the Murdoch tabloids, and the sort of the metropolitan cultural elite, they loved Labour. Labour was based in the metropolitan. But what Tony Blair did very cunningly was to shore Labour of its more absurd sort of elements, which we now call woke, and to align it with the interests of the aspiring middle classes in the provinces. So it was metropolitan elites plus the rising middle classes and minus all the really irritating things that you get from the woke revolution.
So here we are today, however, well into the 21st century, and the Tories, the Conservatives, are overwhelmingly in attendance in Parliament, and Labour is reorganizing. It's in a transition.
Yes.
So there are advantages that you point out in your column. One is that it forces forces both sides to be creative when they're out of power, although you're quite correct. Yep. The irony is both sides think they're without power when they're in power.
Yes, absolutely.
They're constrained.
Absolutely, yeah.
However, there is some negative here, and the negative chiefly is how they regard each other. If I understand correctly, the liberals, the academics, the people who are in control of the persuasion class, we call them the chattering classes.
They regard
Tories as intolerant and bullies and villains. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So there's no respect in Parliament then between the two bodies.
No respect. And you'd find that the chattering classes, let's call them that, they would regard the Tories as being essentially uneducated, stupid people, despite the fact that we have a lot of people in the cabinet who are extremely well-educated, and also as racist bigots, despite the fact that the Tory party had the first female prime minister, the second female prime minister, to Labour's zero female prime ministers, plus that you have Rishi Sunak is
Chancellor,
Indian by origin, you have endless people from ethnic minorities in the Tory cabinet, but nevertheless they are branded with the brush of being racists.
Now here's the part I really like. The Tories will say they're only acting on the will of the people, whereas the Liberals know better. They know much better. Yep. We have exactly the same distinction here, although we don't use that language. The Republicans say that we're just doing what common sense requires. And the Democrats say experts, experts, experts. Do you have people calling experts every night?
Absolutely. And one of the things that happened during the Brexit revolution, the Brexit rupture in British history, was that one of the leading Tories, Michael Gove, said, "We're sick of experts." And of course, the left went absolutely crazy, as saying that this man hates experts and is deriding experts. And that sort of summed up the divide. The Tories, who want to put their faith, at the moment at least, in the will of the people and, won a large election victory, and the liberal elites who, in general, know better what is good for the people than the people know themselves.
The academy. University life in America is all mixed up because we have private schools, public schools, landed schools, huge state-sponsored schools. Your academies are easier to see, although recently I've learned that your universities are also dominated by deans. Where do they get the deans from?
A lot of the deans always in the past, and we would probably not call them deans, we'd call them vice chancellors, or in Oxford and Cambridge, heads of colleges. In the past, they were always, or pretty much most of the time, they were very distinguished senior scholars who've got a great record of academic success. Now, they're increasingly drawn from the BBC or the Guardian newspaper or the Observer newspaper or the senior civil service. So they're coming from other divisions within the chattering class or the progressive establishment, and increasingly they're not serious scholars.
And the Tories, drawing their firepower, I note that they have an appeal to the shopkeepers, and recently they even appeal to old labor. What is it that the Tories are doing that makes it possible for them to have such breadth?
Breath is difficult. I mean, what the Tories were able to do was they took their traditional supporters, i.e. the landed classes and the professional, the landed classes and the middle classes, particularly middle class people who worked in the private sector. And they, in the last election, added to that a big chunk of the working classes by supporting Brexit. And Brexit broke the relationship between the working classes and the Labour Party and shifted a big chunk of the working class into the Conservative column. However, this is a very, not only is this a very broad coalition, it's also a very difficult one to keep together. And once Brexit fades into history, it may be impossible to keep it together.
Now, the disadvantages right away hits you in the face. You mentioned Brexit. Extremism is rewarded.
Yeah.
You mentioned two particular casualties, Rory Stewart, because he does not support Brexit wholeheartedly, and Kathleen Stock, I believe her name is. She's been pushed out of university because she challenges the language, the modern language of woke.
Yes.
We have the similar extremism problem here. Similar.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you're getting, particularly within, I think it's particularly bad in the university sector, because universities are supposed to be based upon free discussion and the operation of critical reason, which requires the clash of opinions. And what you're getting is a homogenous set of opinions, particularly on very sensitive cultural issues. You know, you're getting a homogenous set of opinions being imposed. And I think that's extremely worrying. And the place where this is happening at its worst is the United States. And the United States, one of America's really big, deep powers, was the strength of its universities. And I think to the extent that the universities are being weakened by this cultural climate, that is a very dangerous moment for America. Critical thought, the clash of opinions, liberalism in the real sense of the word, you know, as defined by John Stuart Mill, is absolutely central to the health of a free society. And if you're losing it, you're on the path to decline.
It's striking to me, Adrian, and we'll move on to your recommendations of what is to be done. Striking to me how Mother Country is mirror of the colonies that I live in. Mirror. The divisions are strikingly similar. You use slightly different words, but it comes out the same way.
Yeah, that's right. And in some ways, we're behind you. You know, we are reflecting and catching up with America's divisions of opinion. And in some ways, you know, we're simply the same problems being expressed in different language.
Our pieties don't allow us to laugh. But when I read The Economist, I laugh at America because it's so similar. It's so strikingly similar. And I want to come in like a referee and say, don't you understand? You're talking like a Republican. Don't you get it?
I'm sure
that happens all the time. And do you have a cloakroom in Parliament? Do you the similar to what they have in Congress?
Yes. And then we have a cloakroom. And the biggest thing in Parliament is the tea rooms, where people spend a lot of time drinking tea, and then the bars in the evening when they spend a lot of time drinking things other than tea.
Well, let's go reform Parliament. I'm speaking to Adrian Wooldridge, who is Badgett, his final column for The Economist magazine as he moves on to Bloomberg and becomes an Atlanticist. Most importantly, he's anticipated all this with his new book, The Aristocracy of Talent, How Meritocracy Made the Modern World. It certainly makes Britain and in America in striking fashion. What is to be done when we come back? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.